You're listening to Inland Edition on 91.9 KVCR. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is Shirley Leonard. She's the executive director of the Redlands Conservancy. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
So I look forward to learning more about this. But first, I want to start with, what's the mission and the goals of the Conservancy?
So the Redlands Conservancy was started in 1994, and the mission is to preserve the areas, the region's historic built environment, and the irreplaceable natural and agricultural environments for today's and future generations to enjoy.
Got it. And who was behind it? How did the whole conservancy start?
So this was a group of business people who were interested in preserving the sort of historic quality of the downtown and neighborhood of Redlands. And they saw that in order to do that, they needed to make these historic buildings economically viable for their owners. And so they encouraged adaptive reuse and formed the Redlands Conservancy to further that encouragement. And then as time went on, we eventually recognized that a large part of Redlands' charm, as it were, is the setting, which is on the north side is the Santa Ana River Wash, and on the south and east sides are the canyons, Live Oak Canyon and Santa Mateo Canyon, and then on the west side, what used to be citrus groves with those tall palm trees lining all of the roads. Well, most of those groves are gone now and replaced by tall warehouses, but the east and the south and the north are all still being beautiful for us.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the projects around Redlands that you have either saved, changed, improved, or preserved. Tell me about some of them.
Well, we were involved in saving from demolition several, I think I've counted 9 buildings in Redlands, and ranging from a 1903 cottage that the city was going to demolish, and what you used to call La Rosita, but it's a little drive-through restaurant that was real typical of the highway architecture of the 1950s and 60s, and we helped save that from demolition. The Barton House we helped save from demolition. The 1903 Barton Schoolhouse we helped save from demolition, the Mitten Building. So, and then the Mission Gables Bowl House, which is on the south side of the Redlands Bowl, and we helped save that building from demolition. And it's been converted into the restrooms for the bowl and also offices for Redlands Bowl Music Association.
And how do buildings get on your list? Is it something that you know that's going on in the city of Redlands and you say to your team of volunteers or your board, we can save this? Or how does it become one of your projects?
So the city's Development Services Department, they coordinate the Historic and Scenic Preservation Commission, which is a city commission. And if a building is 50 years old or older and somebody wants to demolish it, the building owner has to go to the Redlands Conservancy, that's us, and offer us the opportunity to either own it and relocate it or salvage pieces from it. So this is one way that we get to learn about the possible demolition. We also keep track of the Planning Commission agenda and the City Council Commission. And we have a wonderful, wonderful partnership with the City of Redlands, and they keep us informed of potential projects also.
Okay, so I'm guessing not all projects make it and you get to save it or preserve it or take part in some way with it. What's the criteria? How does your team decide what you can do if it's something that you guys want to work on or save or preserve or do something with?
So it's one notable failure. We were trying to save a wooden church building on Ligonia and Clay Street, and an organization in Redlands needed that property. They didn't want to adaptively reuse it. They wanted to build something new. So we lost that one, although we took it to the city council. But the criteria would be that it's a notable building. In the case of a couple of them that we've worked on conserving would be the packing houses, the historic packing houses, of which there are very, very few left. And so that seemed like a really important thing for us to help save. That would be in the Mitten Building or the schoolhouse that needed to be removed. It was just a notable building that people drive by for many years and see it and think about, we really appreciate this building. We should do something with it. So it's mostly, there's a lot of sentiment involved in it.
So the Minton Building, which has been used for years now for many different events, mm-hmm. Chocolate Fantasy mm-hmm. and KVCR had an event there a couple of times with Huell Hauser. So was that part of the packing house and one of the buildings you were able to save under your program?
Yes, it was a packing house, and then it was a factory where they manufactured plastic letters for signs, and that was owned by somebody named Mitten, hence the name of the building, Mitten Building. And it had been abandoned, and it was up, actually had a demolition permit issued on it already, and this would have been back in the late 1990s, I think. So about four of our board members and a couple other people got together and formed a group they called Poppy Chief and Moon Group, and they bought it. And then they were the ones who did all the renovation and upgrades, and then eventually converted it into an event center, which has become a mainstay in downtown Redlands. So that was our board members put up their money for it. And a couple other situations, we just helped relocate the building, like the building that had belonged to the Salvation Army, and they were going to demolish it and put in a parking lot. So we partnered up with another organization, and we arranged for the relocation of it for about a half a mile to another lot. So we there's a variety of ways we can approach it, and our biggest problem today is that if somebody needs to relocate the building, or we have that opportunity to do it, we don't have a place to put it. So, you know, it would be great if we had a couple of city lots where when an opportunity came, we could just, you know, call the mover and pick it up and take it over there. It's not quite that simple, but we don't have sites like that where we can do it. So we have to rely on opportunities for people to donate land and or buildings, and then we can get busy.
Got it. Let me reintroduce our guest is Shirley Leonard. She's the executive director of the Redlands Conservancy. Okay, so you mentioned money, so I want to talk a little bit about that because this doesn't happen just overnight and, you know, with people always coming in and writing checks and making it happen. So I want to ask, what is the Emerald Necklace Grantor? Is that a fundraiser for you, and what is it?
Yes, it's a fundraiser and funraiser, we like to call them. And we have done this for 4 years, and our last one that we had scheduled was about the day after they closed the state down for COVID back in 2020. And we didn't do it this year either. So that we generated a map that goes counterclockwise around the city of Redlands, all the way through Santa Mateo Canyon, Live Oak Canyon, the Orange Groves and Mentone area along the Santa Ana River Wash, what we could call, and actually the 1987 Parks and Open Space Plan for the City of Redlands called this the Redlands Emerald Necklace. And it surrounds the city going through the green spaces of the canyons and also the citrus groves. And then along the way happens to go past some of the historic sites in the area. So the Grand Tour, we actually have the map and it is on our website, but the Grand Tour was a bus tour, a luxury bus tour, and then also people could drive their cars. And then we had about, the first year we had about 150 cyclists who did it on their own. And it stops at various places along the route, and we involved lots of the city's restaurants to provide snacks along the way at places that were maybe historically significant or scenically significant. We called these the chew and view spots. So it introduced people to what is out here in Redlands, as well as giving us an opportunity to make some money from that project. Well, since we haven't been able to do it for 2 years, last year we substituted something we call the Fresh Air Challenge, which was through the month of January. We were asking people to see if they could walk, well, totally walk 1 million miles in the month. And, you know, we figured if every one of Redlands residents so I walked, 10 miles or so, we get to 1 million miles. Anyway, they pay a small fee to participate in it, and it goes through the month of January. People could do it on their own. They could wear a mask or not, and so it seemed to be very safe, and yet it got people out of the house and learning more about our public trails that we manage and the open space sites that we manage, and a helpful activity. We're going to do that again this in 2022 in January. So we're planning that now.
We're going to take a break right now, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation with Shirley Leonard, Executive Director of the Redlands Conservancy. I'm Lillian Vasquez, and you're listening to Inland Edition. We'll be right back. If you're just joining us, our guest is Shirley Leonard. She is the Executive Director of the Redlands Conservancy, and we're talking about some of the projects that are going on in the City of Redlands and some of their responsibility. And one of the responsibility is fundraising. So I was going to ask, how did the organization fare during the pandemic? Obviously, you came up with a plan B and you went with the Fresher Challenge. And that you have that plan in January, you are going to do that again as a fundraiser. What else did you guys do or lose, or how did the pandemic change your organization?
Well, it saved me a lot of time because I didn't have to drive anywhere to meetings. We could do everything by Zoom. But our donors and everything, all of our work is funded by private donations. And also the events that we put on throughout the year. But our donors were extremely generous and very supportive. And we did receive, I think, 3 or 4 grants from various agencies. I know that San Bernardino County participated with Inland Empire Community Foundation and several others that were able to help support us throughout the year. And we are extremely grateful to our donors for all of their support.
Tell me about some of the educational projects. I know you have so much going on. And when I was checking out your website, I saw that there really is a lot there that you guys try to do. Share some of the educational projects. Is that involve youth?
Well, yeah. So our main educational project right now is our outdoor education program at Redlands Gateway Ranch. And this is a 12-acre property in Live Oak Canyon, which we helped the City of Redlands buy. When I say help, we do all the negotiating and they provide the money. So the city owns it, we lease it, and we're developing our outdoor experience headquarters there. It's a staging area for hikers and cyclists and equestrians. It's also a native plant demonstration garden, and it's our outdoor education center. So we have facilities there. And prior to COVID, we were conducting workshops and activities for people of all ages. And we actually brought in a couple of buses of young people from other parts of the city so that they could get out to the ranch and enjoy the country life, as it were. We have a plan ready to put into place as soon as we feel comfortable opening it up to the public again. But the programs teach people about using native plants for landscaping, how native plants help the environment and help stave off climate change. We have oak tree restoration project going at Gateway Ranch and also the preserve on the north side of the road. And we're attempting to plant oak trees in such a way that they can be sustainable because they do need water to get started. So we have oak trees started, an oak forest started out at Gateway Ranch. We have the native plant demonstration garden. So we have a couple of events coming up in October and November, and these will be gathering acorns from the oak trees on site. Next event would be propagating those acorns and then planting some of the seedlings that they started a year earlier. When we can feel comfortable opening it up to the public again, we will be having probably workshops and activities at the ranch, probably 2 or 3 a month. And we also open it up for tours from schools, whether it's charter schools or homeschooled students or even the public schools. So we can plan events for just designed exactly for whatever it is that the teacher is hoping to accomplish.
Nice. So that's getting our youth involved. So it sounds like it can be something for our youth, their parents and grandparents. Mm-hmm. It's kind of all generations can be involved in your different projects. So it seems.
Yes, absolutely. And we have volunteer opportunities. In fact, nothing would happen in our organization if it were not for the volunteers. I'm the only full-time paid staff, and we have a part-time administrative assistant. But otherwise, everything happens by the volunteers. The development of the native plant demonstration garden, the volunteer work that goes on at Asistencia, the trail care work, the putting on the education programs, everything's done by volunteers.
Since you brought up Assistencia, are you located there or where are you physically located?
So the Assistencia is that mission-like looking buildings compound on Barton Road, yes. Close to Loma Linda. And that was built in the 1930s by the Works Progress Administration. San Bernardino County Museum owned that and operated it as a museum auxiliary and also as a wedding chapel.
Right.
And they had a caretaker there permanently. And then in about 4 years ago, they contacted me and asked me if we thought that the Redlands Conservancy would like to own it. So they gifted it to Redlands Conservancy. Mm. We have to preserve it. And we have to own it in perpetuity. And the purpose is to conserve the building and the site and make it available to the public to enjoy. So it is we own it. It's our headquarters. And we have a general manager who operates it to generate some revenue so that we can support the building and the structure and continue the renovations and the preservation efforts for it.
And is that where your office is physically when you are open to full scale?
We have an office there, but my office is in my home.
Okay.
Just happens to be really convenient. And our administrative assistant, well, before COVID, she was spending 2 days a week there being available. So we have not opened the building, the site yet for public tours, but we've been taking advantage of the past year and a half of sort of downtime to get ready for that. We have a tour that's being set up that will involve QR codes so that people can go around the site and click on the QR code and get with their phone and get to some interesting information and pieces of information about the history of that building.
Okay. Now, you mentioned it that volunteers, as in any, especially any nonprofit, volunteers are the heart and soul of them, as is KVCR. Mm. How can others that find this interesting, right up their alley, how can they get involved?
Well, the best way to do it is to go to our website, and there's a menu that lists how to help. And click on that. And there's some options. One, of course, is to donate. And another is to volunteer. And we give them several possibilities. They can work on trail care. They can be part of the outdoor ambassadors. They could be involved in native plant restoration work or the outdoor education work or just planning events and helping to put on different events. So that's the best way to reach us.
Well, very good. And my last question to you, what project or projects are you most proud of?
Oh, I can't. So I'm the only executive director we've ever had. I started this in 2006, so I didn't have anybody to live up to. I just kind of create the job as I go along. And at the time, we didn't own anything. And now we own 100 acres out east of the airport in Redlands. We own some acreage in the Santa Mateo Canyon, and we own the Assistencia. We also had conservation easements on 550 acres of the City of Redlands property. And having that stable of properties is something I'm glad that we were able to do and to make connections to the community so that they become more and more aware of the value of the historic sites and also the value of the natural and agricultural open spaces in the community.
Well, very good. Shirley, thank you so much for how you're preserving and working in the City of Redlands. It's been great to learn more about your project. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Shirley Leonard is Executive Director of the Redlands Conservancy. You'll find more on their website at redlandsconservancy.org. We'll include the web link on our program page. This week, KVCR and our news partners are sharing feature stories related to wildfire smoke. Here's KVCR's Rick Dulock with the latest feature.
Today, we continue our investigation, Dangerous Air. It's based on an analysis by NPR's California Newsroom that looked at more than 10 years of data and found a shocking increase in wildfire smoke. Children are especially at risk, so KQED's Farida Jabvala Romero visited schools in rural Northern California, one of the worst hit areas, and brings us this second feature in our series.
Long-timers say sports events anchor the town of Willows, 100 miles north of Sacramento. At a Friday junior varsity football game in this town of 6,000, cheerleaders shake their gold and purple pom-poms.
K-I-C-K, kick that ball! K-I-C-K, kick that ball!
Thick haze covers nearby mountains in this part of the Sacramento Valley as megafires burn in Northern California. When there's too much smoke in the air, schools cancel outdoor activities like football. But today...
Today's better, obviously, because we're playing the game.
Stacy Lancey has two teen sons, one of them a student at this high school. She's also a third grade teacher and says the bad air quality is affecting students.
As far as like kids going out to recess, playing sports, and kind of like overall health, we don't know why we're having headaches and runny noses.
Headaches, runny noses, and a myriad of more serious health problems have all been linked to breathing wildfire smoke. Willows endured more than 3 months of smoke per year on average between 2016 and 2020, making it the smokiest place in the state. Millions of Americans are also breathing a lot more smoke from western wildfires, an impact felt from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. That's according to an analysis of a decade of federal satellite images by NPR's California Newsroom in partnership with Stanford University's Environmental Change and Human Outcomes Lab. In a small town like Willows, physician assistant Brett Brown regularly treats patients at the hospital's family clinic. When there's smoke in the air, he sees more patients suffering asthma attacks, intense migraines, and stress.
There's always somebody who says something about, well, because of the smoke, insert, you know, problem here, whether it's I haven't been able to breathe as well because my allergies are so bad, or I haven't been able to see my mom and dad because of COVID, and now I can't even go outside, so my mental health is so much worse.
Children are more sensitive to dangerous particles and wildfire smoke because their lungs are developing. Since this scale of wildfires has never been seen before in modern history, we don't know much about the long-term impacts. And that has parents like Brown worried.
So if you let your kids play outside during smoke days, what's going to happen to their lung capacity or their cancer risk? We don't know what that data looks like yet.
At Murdoch Elementary, hundreds of students pour out of classrooms and play with balls and hula hoops during recess. It's a good day, but Principal Miguel Barriga doesn't take this recess for granted. When the air quality reaches levels the federal government says are unhealthy, Barriga has to keep students inside all day. And that's tough for some kids.
You know, we'll end up in the office, acting out in class, get emotional one way or another, or want to go home.
Like other school administrators here, Barriga monitors local air quality reports constantly during wildfire season. He says he wants better forest management and solutions to climate change so fires don't burn so intensely.
You want to believe that the decisions at levels higher than ours are going to be made, will be made to make it be more normal.
More like it used to be, he says, when you could go outside and not worry about breathing wildfire smoke. I'm Farida Javala Romero in Willows.
And I'm Rick Dulock, and that's part two of our feature stories from NPR's California Newsroom.
Join us again next week for Inland Edition, Wednesday at 2 p.m. and 6:30, right here on 91.9 KVCR. To hear this episode and past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/inlandedition. You can also listen to Inland Edition on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, or search for Inland Edition on your favorite streaming service. Inland Edition is a production of KVCR News. Support for this production, including writing and editing, comes from Sharina Wad, Rick Dulock, and David Fleming. And we get technical website and social media support from Tim Steidel, Sean Houlihan, and Natasha Coles. I'm your host, Lillian Vasquez. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.